You're listening to
Maine and Gray, the intersection of the city of God with the city of man, where we talk with interesting people doing interesting things out in God's world, and all for God's glory. Although we only do one take, and I say that every time. Yeah, also fix my hair.
That might be a problem.
I actually pulled a buttoned-up shirt to wear today, and then Lillian was reminded that my belly's sticking out. But I see you went with the Carhartt for today.
Yeah, I was wearing Carhartt before it was cool.
I'm not so sure it's cool yet. Although Hoosiers would disagree.
Yeah, well, now it's just expensive, so.
It is expensive. Isn't it amazing you can buy Carhartt farmer's wear at, Dick's Sporting Goods?
It is. It's really strange. It used to be Tractor Supply. That's where you get it, and now it's everywhere.
What's Tractor Supply?
Oddly enough, not really about tractors.
It's not. I've never been in one. I've seen one. This is going to be a hard episode because I feel like we're just going to laugh the whole time and not actually talk about something substantial, but. We'll try our best to get through it without too much laughter. Joel Flora, thank you for being here today. Thanks the farmer.
Yeah.
Although you've been many things in your life, because you started working full-time when you were 12 years old somehow.
Yeah.
Being a part of an Amish society, you avoided the child labor laws.
It's not Amish.
It wasn't Amish. You're right. It wasn't Amish. It was what? German?
Old German Baptist Brethren. It's a mouthful.
Old German Baptist Brethren. This is in Ohio.
Yep. It's a Brethren church. So Church of the Brethren, Grace Brethren, they all derive from the same background.
Okay. And it's an Anabaptist tradition similar to the Amish, at
Correct.
Least as far as theologically speaking.
Yeah.
So when you see Amish people, you know that you're similar, you have a similar background.
Yeah. It's somewhat similar. I mean, there's some differences. Amish are more bishop rule.
Yeah.
Whereas the church I grew up in was more of a collective, spirit-led group. So, I mean, and there's obviously
a lot
more. Yeah, we have electricity, running water,
yeah.
And all that.
Yeah.
Cars, no TV, no radio, no internet.
In the house.
Period.
Really?
Yeah.
So electricity is okay, but just not using the...
Correct.
And you've told me before the principle behind that, but what's the reasoning behind just not using those technologies? What's it called? Plain folk?
Yeah. I think simplicity,
mm-hmm.
you know, a simple lifestyle, being removed from the world, you know, being in the world, but not of the world. They take that very literal and quite serious. So any kind of worldly entertainment, going to the movies, going mm-hmm. to fairs, that type of thing is all forbidden.
I remember you saying that it was also forbidden because they wanted time to evaluate whether it was good for them.
Yeah. That would be true to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, I mean, is generally a good idea with most things. To take time, you know, figure out what the ramifications are. But there are some things like technology that they just see a lot of pitfalls in
mm-hmm.
and choose to stay removed from it.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's fair. Probably a lot less depression and anxiety and social issues as well, since they're kind of removed from.
To a degree, but sin is sin. And
sin. That's good. Thank you.
It creeps in no matter what kind of precautions we take. So,
it's interesting, though, because as far as farming goes, it's fairly. I mean, they use pretty much all the technology for farming, right? Or is it?
Yeah, for the most part. GPS, guidance systems, you know, radar for weather, and you know, that kind of thing.
Hmm. So it's mostly just in the household, in the churches, we're going to not use this technology.
And they have allowed in recent years internet use for businesses.
Okay.
To some level. And they actually, a few years ago, created their own private email network. I think through Verizon, maybe, if I remember right. So some of them are allowed to have emails, but that still, most people still practice having someone manage that for them. And so they
sounds like a dream come true.
Yeah, you read emails and print them off and hand them to the appropriate
That's right.
person. So
It's like having an assistant.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Exactly.
Wow. So how did you get into farming? Obviously, you are a farmer now, but you haven't always been.
Yeah.
So kind of tell us about that story.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in a farming community.
Mm-hmm.
My grandpa farmed 90 acres, and so he's small, but I grew up around farming.
What's a big farm?
Well,
90 acres isn't big.
Yeah.
For us city folk.
Today.
That sounds like Kansas to me, so yeah, I don't really know what 90 acres
means. So most of your production farmers today are, I would say, somewhere in the 5,000 and up.
Oh, wow.
Range.
Okay.
So usually in every community, there's at least one operator that's farming a significant amount. In our area, it's Tom Farms. Kip Tom is, he served as under President Trump as a agricultural ambassador or something like that. I think he's the largest landowner in Indiana, maybe.
Hmm.
But usually there's one in every community. And then the rest of it is broke up into what would be considered small now would be under like around 1,000 acres.
Wow.
Something like that. And so we're considered a small farm, and wonder sometimes how we're still hanging on.
How many acres do you farm?
We're currently farming around 850.
850 acres.
And that's two families. So my father-in-law and his brother farmed together for about 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually how I got into farming. So as a child, that was my dream. I wanted to be a farmer.
You wanted to be a farmer.
That's my grandpa was a farmer. I love being around it. That's what I wanted to do.
Some kids want to grow up to be a doctor or astronaut. You wanted to be a farmer.
Yeah, I had the whole.
Which is awesome. And you're doing it.
Yeah.
It's like you're living the dream.
I am now. But back then, or when I was coming up to the point of, you know, starting a career, it just, the timing wasn't right. So when Grandpa retired and the farm passed on to the next generation, I wasn't old enough. So my cousin took it over, and I went into construction instead. So fast forward a few years, I married a farmer's daughter.
Mm.
And interestingly enough, it never once crossed my mind, like, oh, I can farm now.
This is my way in.
So I really married her for who she is.
Yeah.
But, and then we moved, you know, to Indy. So we weren't around the farm. And then I think it was 2018, my father-in-law's brother passed away.
Mm.
And his son-in-law took over his spot. There's just a lot of chaos, a lot of, you know, stuff to figure out. And I was asked if I would help out for a harvest season. So I did. And then for the next, 4, 5, 6 years, something like that, I just started going up more and more every year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we finally made the decision that eventually we're going to end up there.
Yeah.
And take over the farm. So last year we made the big move. So
what is the, this is super rudimentary for non-farmers, but what is the growing season? Because you said you would go up for harvest. Mm-hmm. Now I kind of know what that means. Cause I know that I wouldn't see, you wouldn't be around for a couple months at a time, but like, when does it begin? What happens during the growing season? When is harvest?
Yeah.
Like, what does that look like throughout the year?
So it depends year to year. Mm-hmm. It depends on, you know, how early you get the crop in the ground, get it planted. And then also what you plant. So we plant corn and soybeans. And they have different growing maturity seasons depending on what you plant. So typically...
And this is like April? You're putting stuff in the ground?
April, May. Okay. We'll be planting really as soon as the temperatures and the weather's fit.
Okay.
We get in as early as possible. We just don't want, you know, early freezes and that type of thing.
Yep.
So it's usually a couple weeks in the spring I would go up, and then fall, again, it kind of depends on how
weather and everything.
Weather, yeah. How early you got planted, how late, how things are looking this year. So we're probably 2-3 weeks away from getting in the fields, getting started. So we're we're prepping and getting things ready. And then on a good year, we'd like to be done by Thanksgiving, but it doesn't always happen.
So. What are you growing this year?
So every year we rotate crop, grow corn and soybeans. So it's usually about 50% of each. And that's pretty typical for most farmers to rotate corn and soybeans.
What is there a reason for that?
There's a market for them.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, it kind of boils down to what
you can sell.
You grow what you can sell.
Yeah.
There are other crops that guys raise in our immediate area, kind of in the central Midwest, though. Corn and soybeans are your most common.
You told me about a lady that randomly accosted you in public because you were wearing a soybean hat or something.
Yeah, right? Well, I was just wearing a seed hat.
Seed hat. Well, regular. Yeah. Everyone has one of those. They're just in their closet. Just let me get my seed hat today, honey. That's what AgriGold is.
AgriGold is a seed company.
Okay,
yeah.
So they supply farmers with the seeds for their crops.
Correct.
Okay.
So we buy seed from AgriGold, Pioneer, different places, but those are the
Monsanto.
Two. Yeah. The devil. anyway,
soybeans.
So I was in, I think it was Lowe's, and I was checking out, and I'm in construction, right? So I'm just buying material,
right,
and wearing a free hat.
Yeah. Free hat.
And I was involved to some degree, but I didn't really identify as a farmer.
Yeah.
And so it really caught me off guard, but she looked at me with just complete disgust and was like, "Oh, you grow, you know," something, I can't remember her exact words, but something about GMOs or something like
right,
that.
Right. Yeah.
And I was just like, I didn't know what to say. I was just like, sorry for feeding the world.
Yeah. We're sorry for feeding you. Yeah.
So yeah, I think that was like one of the only times that I've ever experienced.
That's amazing.
Public.
Wow.
Disgust.
Public disgust for growing something.
Yeah.
That reminded me of the John Mellencamp quote, who's, you know, John Mellencamp, famous singer, lives in Bloomington, Indiana. And so he often gets asked, "Are you still doing Farm Aid?" Which is the concert to support farmers,
yeah,
right? And he said, I think to myself, "You still eating?" You know, like, it's just, I don't think people realize that food comes from somewhere,
right?
And that doesn't mean it comes from the grocery store.
Yeah,
it actually comes from farmers,
right?
That are putting stuff in the ground and growing it.
Yeah, it really is one of the most important parts of our society.
Yeah,
food.
And I'm not trying to sidestep her issue, because I think she has an ethical issue with GMOs and all that. I get that.
Sure.
But just to be able to just to accost somebody in public because they're wearing a seed hat.
Right. Well, and I mean,
that's really something.
The hard facts of it are, though, is most anger that we get is usually misguided.
How so?
Well, just, you know, there's hot button topics that float around on social media about GMOs, about how the farmers are, you know, ruining our planet. There's too many cows, you know, whatever the case
cow
may
gas
be.
Is killing the ozone or something is what I've heard now.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I mean, as a farmer, if you don't take care of your soil health and if you dump in a bunch of chemicals unnecessarily, if you're mistreating your cattle, you have no profit.
Right.
So it's in our best interest to be as green as humanly possible, if you want to use that word, because that's our livelihood.
Right.
You know, we've that land's going to be there next year, and it's got to produce another crop. So, you know, we've got to take care of it. So.
Yeah. That reminded me of the biblical principle of letting ground lie fallow for a while, right? I mean, you're supposed to rotate your crops. Is that still something farmers do, or is it?
Not much. So the reason for doing that is to break cycles for insects and disease and those types of things, depleting nutrients.
Right.
as you're growing a crop. As technology has gotten better, we've found, you know, different practices mm-hmm. to break that cycle with insecticides, herbicides, different things, crop rotations. Mm-hmm. We're not just planting wheat every year or corn every year. We're rotating, putting different crops in.
Because some crops take stuff out of the soil. Some crops put it back in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. So corn requires more nitrogen, for instance, and soybeans inject. Not enough, but it certainly helps. You don't have to put as much input.
That's interesting. So one year you could put corn in one field, and the next year put soybeans there, and it almost replenishes the soil. You need to add a little bit more, but it replenishes what nutrients the corn would need for the following year.
Correct. And then from a financial standpoint, if you own ground, it's a little easier, but most guys are renting ground. And so who's going to take that hit, that monetary hit, you know, for letting a field lie fallow for a year?
Right.
You know, I'm renting this piece of ground for, you know, $300 an acre. And I'm not supposed to grow a crop on it.
Interesting.
So am I taking that hit, or is mm-hmm. the landowner going to take that mm-hmm. hit? Or, you know, so from a financial standpoint, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So they did try it. There were some programs, I think my father said back in the 60s, where the government would pay you to let your ground or part of your ground rest for a year.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, all that really came out of that was a loss of market share.
Interesting.
So, I mean, you know, it kind of backfired a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
I still think it shows that the biblical principle, you know, because it used to be an Old Testament law, which, you know, we in our neck of the woods believe was fulfilled in Christ, et cetera, so we don't need to follow it judicially. But I think it's super interesting that thousands of years ago, this law that God gave was actually good for the crops themselves because it would replenish the soil or whatever and, you know, give the land a rest.
Yeah. We also have less land.
Yeah,
to
it's
some
true.
Degree.
Yeah.
So land's disappearing every year.
Those city folk.
City folk taking it all up.
But we got to have our coals.
And more and more people are living longer.
Eating more.
Yeah, eating more. and also, I mean, it doesn't really matter what you pick up, but it's not even a food product. I mean,
that's true.
Corn and soybeans.
What's corn in?
Everything.
Wow.
I mean, I just was reading the other day, carpet.
Corn is in carpet.
Yeah, it's like a
interesting.
They have replaced not all carpet, but
but just
certain,
the fact that you could use that for
replacing like a petroleum based, you know, with corn.
So. And it's of course in gasoline, ethanol. It's in
right. So gasoline. most of Indiana's corn and soybeans goes to biodiesels, ethanol, obviously feeding animals, cattle, dairies.
Mm-hmm. So you're not producing the sweet corn that we would eat at the end of the harvest?
The only sweet corn I produce is what I eat.
Oh, okay. So you actually do grow some sweet
corn.
Yeah,
we didn't this year. Last year we put up way too much, and so we decided not to grow any this year.
And put up means canning? Help me out.
Freezing.
Freezing? Okay. No.
Yeah. That's always a fun day.
Freezing day?
Yeah.
Why? A lot of work.
It's just a lot of work, and everybody comes together. You know, all the kids are involved, and it's just a lot of fun.
Like an Amish barn raising.
Yeah,
kind of. But everyone's cooking or whatever. So what do you like about farming?
How much time do you have?
Oh, my word. We've got about an hour episode. I don't know how much time you really? I mean, you like it that much.
I love it.
Fascinating.
I absolutely love it.
What?
If I
what's the mystique?
I think, well, for me, I think it's the lifestyle.
Okay.
It slows you down a little bit. There's always more to do than what time you have time for. So it's not that you're sitting around doing nothing. But it's just you're going about it at a slower pace. And not necessarily in terms of physical slower pace, but mentally.
Mm-hmm.
You have time to stop for lunch. You have time to, you know, help your daughter fix her bike you know, when she's crying, they're always there. The kids are involved. They're, you know, that's another thing I love is every day is maybe not take your kid to work day, but kids just around during the work day. And they're involved to some degree. And so that's nice. The other thing I like for myself personally is I'm not just doing one thing every day. Every day is completely different. One day I might be, you know, engineering a solution for a problem that we've been having over the last few years and doing welding and fabrication. And another day I might be doing, you know, fixing a tractor. There's always just tons of stuff to work on.
Yeah, a lot of variety.
Everywhere you look.
It's not just putting seeds in the ground.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah, and that's obviously the most important part, but right. everything else needs to be done, and there's usually no budget to hire it done, so you just have to learn how to do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So I love the variety.
Okay.
So I would say for me, variety.
That's interesting because I think perhaps some people think farming would be boring.
It's not boring.
But it's not boring.
Well, and I love, so the boring, what some people would consider the boring parts of just sitting in the tractor going around and around. It's like a NASCAR race. Like, what's the point of this?
Don't tell NASCAR people that, please. They'll stop listening.
But the amount of time that I have spent just contemplating life, things going on, peace and quiet. I think it's heaven on earth to me.
Yeah.
So, and then there's also something that I find special. I'm sure everyone doesn't feel this as much, but just the generational weight that gets passed on and grows as the longer a farm continues. I mean, I'm working fields that 3-4 generations ago looked a lot different. I mean, some of it was marshland that they hand dug ditches and drained and created farmland.
Wow.
So the amount of work and blood and sweat and tears that went in generations past to bring it to where it is today, how long they, you know, it's been maintained and kept up. And there's even one field in particular where, you know, my father-in-law's dad passed away. They found him. And so every time I go past that spot in the field, it's like, you know.
You go around it real wide.
No, there's just, no. It just brings a level or a weight of importance, I guess, to what you're doing.
That's really interesting. And I think that even before you said that your father-in-law's dad passed there, I was thinking those fields represent generations of joys and sorrows, right? I mean, you could point to maybe that hill over there or that drain over there, and maybe there was a wedding somewhere nearby or a church that used to be there and not there. So it's like it's kind of a geographic history right there of a family and a farm. And I admire that, and I don't think that there's really anywhere else like that. I mean, maybe
very few places.
I mean, in suburbia, you know, a subdivision's 20 years old, 30 years old, you tear it down and build apartments or something, right?
Well, our school, the small town school, you know, is getting tore down. And it's like, I think it was new when my wife was, when my father-in-law was graduating or something, somewhere in there. Anyway, there's nothing wrong with it. And they're tearing it down and building a new one. And when I heard that,
it was probably asbestos.
Yeah, probably. Well, when I heard that, I made the comment, like, what's wrong with it?
Yeah.
And my father-in-law was like, it's not new.
Yeah. Probably sarcastically.
Sarcastically. But it is real. I mean, there's a level of history that gets passed on. And there's some bad things that, you know, that come along with that. I mean, the level of stuff that's packed into every nook and cranny.
Right.
You know, that was... a while back, we found a sack full of, like, chocked full of lime soap.
Oh, wow.
That Stewart's probably great-grandmother or somebody, I don't know, grandma or somebody, maybe his mom, I don't know,
yeah,
had made, and it's just been sitting in the basement for how many years. It's like, oh, we should use this up.
Interesting. Doesn't that eat your skin alive? Like, can you use
probably.
That? Probably. That's really cool, though. There's longevity there, and, you know, that's just most of the rest of society is just detached from that type of longevity. Everything's new, everything's now, it's sudden, it's fast.
Yeah.
And there are good things about that. You know, when I go to the hospital and I'm bleeding, I want it to stop fast.
Sure.
But I think I'm hopefully in a holy way jealous of the ability you have to stop and smell the roses. You're out there farm, or in this case, manure.
Yeah.
But you can stop and smell the manure pretty regularly, right?
It
you
smells
can just,
like roses.
It smells like smells like money, hopefully, money. To you. Yeah. And that's, I like that. I remember I grew up just east of Amish country in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So I was closer to Philadelphia than to the Amish in Lancaster.
Yeah.
But I remember going out to, we would take field trips, et cetera, to Dutch Wonderland and all that kind of stuff.
My parents do that. It's so funny.
Your parents take,
they're, you know,
field, like they go look, to vacation.
They
to,
look like Amish, even though they aren't.
Right.
And they go to like Holmes County for,
what's
their
that?
Anniversary. It's like a big Amish community in
That's
Ohio.
Really funny.
And I'm like, why?
You're living this. Why are you going? Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I just remember going out to the fields one year and to the Amish fields, and we were looking for a quilt. My brother wanted to buy a quilt with his wife and something. And so we just drove out in the middle of Amish country.
Yeah.
And it was so peaceful. It was so quiet. There were no power lines obstructing your views.
Yeah.
It was just very simple. I remember thinking how refreshing it was. And I was there for a couple hours, right? Not like it was days and days. And, you know, I still had probably a cell phone, you know, in my pocket or whatever. But
Yeah, they do too.
That's fair. But I just remember it being really relaxing. I'm like, this is awesome. I wish I could do this more often. But I think that probably would wear off quickly because I'm so accustomed to life in the in a city or in suburbia. And
it doesn't take as long as you think.
Really? That's true, because you moved up, you know, moved from the city to the fields, or to the
even
know,
just,
farm
even
last year.
Even just coming here this morning, I hit Westfield, and I'm like, I made the right call.
I made the right
The traffic.
We had a
crazy
pact. You weren't supposed to go anywhere. That's a shame. That's cool, though. I do think there's something to be said for a quiet, small lifestyle.
Yeah. Another thing I love about it is it forces you to grow your faith muscle.
Okay.
You know, you're working the land, you plant a seed, you prepare, you do all the things that you can do, but at the end of the day, it's not yours.
Mm-hmm.
You have no control over it. Mm. That takes a lot of faith. And it's Yeah, we're probably on the verge of bankruptcy every year.
Wow.
You just don't always feel it or see it, but it really does just take one stretch of no rain or a natural disaster or what. I mean, it's all in God's hands. So
yeah.
You plant and you pray, and
that's awesome.
Hopefully you have a joyous harvest.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that makes so much sense with all the stories and principles in the Bible about farming.
Hmm.
Where you just, you know, here you read things about planting seeds and waiting for God to give the increase, right? And that's what farming is.
Yeah.
It's, you're waiting on God.
Yeah.
And the rest of us are kind of like, no, we're going to be busy doing stuff. And it's not that you're not busy doing stuff, but you really do have to live a life of faith out there.
Yeah.
Hmm. What is it that you wish non-farmers would know about farming, right?
Hmm.
Like, I mean, I'm sure I don't know much about farming, but you probably wish, like, oh, man, I wish Dave would just shut up about XYZ so the kid, because farming is what to you?
I think if everybody could just see the amount of care, passion, pain, toil that goes in to bringing food to your table, bringing the things that you enjoy. I wish that everybody could see that side of it, the realness of it, the passion behind it. And instead, so often, people see the the clips, the, you know, social media clips, and, you know, ruining the planet and doing all the, you know, all these things.
Yeah.
And it's the exact opposite.
Talk about biting the hand that feeds you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, I mean, I think, I mean, we used to be, you know, nomads.
Right.
We wandered looking for food and water, and farming, modern farming, allows us to build cities and and plant roots and stay in one place and do other things. So it literally is biting the hand that holds societies together. I mean, you lose your food source and the society crumbles. So I wish people could see that. Now, there have been in recent years, I'd say the last, you know, close to a decade, there have been a handful of YouTubers, farmers that have picked up YouTube and used social media.
Oh, I bet that's wild.
And just you follow along in the day of a farmer and you see, you know, those frustrating moments where, you know, things break and it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there is, the tide is shifting.
Okay.
I guess is my point in that. I think people are starting to see through, you know, some of that stuff.
So. Maybe that's part of the backlash to the negative press you guys get about farming, where people are like, oh, it's organic, it needs to be organic, et cetera. So at least it brought attention to the farming process itself.
Yeah.
So in a way, maybe that's somewhat good, even though people have these wildly uneducated ethical standards about what a seed should be or should not be. It at least brought attention to the process, I think.
Yeah, that's true, and I think you know, when it comes to organic, non-GMO, you know, all these things, there's always a balance between doing something that's better and keeping up with demand. So if I decided to go organic tomorrow, I wouldn't have a truly organic crop for, I think, 7 years. I mean, it's
oh, wow.
It's quite a while.
Wow.
The world can't, I mean, we wouldn't survive if everyone just made that jump tomorrow.
Right.
And
organic doesn't mean all good. I think that's what some people, and
well,
here I am.
There's a funny meme that floats around sometimes that it's like a picture of a sprayer in a field at night with its lights on, and it says organic. It's like a Chinese term for spraying at night or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they do use...
Like, Ebola is organic, and it kills people, right? So it's not like just because it has, you know, a certain amount of carbon in it, it's good, right?
Sure.
It's just shorthand for no antibiotics or no pesticides or whatever.
Right. Well, and it's funny, too, because, you know, there's a big poultry operation up near us, and for a few or a year or two, I think it was, they tried to do non-GMO corn for all their feed.
Okay.
And they couldn't get enough corn.
Yeah.
It just wasn't available. And so now their product says all natural.
Okay. Close enough.
So, yeah, I mean, it's all how you look at it. But
so why do you like crop farming and not chicken farming, dairy farming, animal farm?
I like to go on vacation.
You can't do that as an animal farmer.
Yeah, you can, but it's... I mean, I enjoy animals. We had animals growing up, and I think if the need arose, I would do it again. But it does strap you down a lot more.
And the hours are probably really different, right? Like cows, a dairy farm.
Yeah,
I've heard stories. You have to, you know, get up at 3 and milk the cows or whatever, and go back to bed and all that.
Yeah, you hear the jokes about, like, you know, Army, Navy, Air Force, and the Air Force is like the bougie one,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
And row crop farmers, we fall in that category.
Okay, you're the Air Force of farming.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. Who are the Marines? Dairy farmers?
Probably.
Yeah, they're just out there taking the bullets.
Yeah. They're getting up at 4 a.m. birthing cows. And,
yeah.
Yeah, it's madness all the time. There's always a fire to put out somewhere. They're always going 100 miles an hour.
Wow. Well, we like our cheese here in this country, so they better keep up the good work. So a while back, you guys had fires on your property, right? You lost a couple buildings.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. It ended up being arson?
It was arson, yeah. So I think over the course of a year and a half, there were, I want to say 13 or 14 barns that were lost. Wow. Not ours. I mean, ours was
just in your area, right?
Yeah, just in our area.
It's crazy.
And they were all 100-plus-year-old barns. I mean, they were all, you know, landmarks, essentially. Not really usable for much anymore.
Well, hipsters could make tables out of them, out of the wood.
But there's just a piece of history. You know?
For sure.
I mean, it was a part of the farm. Yeah. You know, my daughter was hoping to have horses in there one day. And, you know, I mean, there's just...
Right.
It's just sad to see it go. So, but they did catch him, and he's currently serving probably the rest of his life in prison.
Crazy.
So.
Hey, what's the motivation behind that? Like, why did, was it just pranking or just
mental
illness?
Mental illness. Yeah. Yeah.
So dangerous, though.
Yeah. And it was really sad, too, because he pulled his son in. Like, he was training his son how to do it.
What on earth?
It's like a, you know, preteen.
Sad.
So, yeah, it was... It was definitely sad. I'm glad he's caught.
Yeah, and for lots of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of people living in fear, you know, every night. It's like, is my barn next, you know?
Right.
You just never know. So,
man.
Honestly, it was getting to the point where he was probably not going to last much longer because people were, you know, staying up all night.
Oh, yeah.
Just sitting out in their barns, just waiting.
waiting for the guy to show up. And yeah. And set their barn on fire.
So,
wow, man, that's. I'm glad you guys were okay and recovered.
Yeah.
Hopefully, insurance covered some of the buildings. Maybe
some. Yeah, some of it. I mean, you can't replicate. You can replicate it, but you can't build it back like it was.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking virgin timber.
Wow,
it's just not available anymore.
Right.
You know, so.
Only twisted 2x4s from Home Depot is available now. Right. one of my favorite quotes was by Martin Luther. At least he's credited to having said that all of the vocations in life are God's mask to feed people. And I really feel like that's a direct application to farming, that God uses farmers to feed people. I mean, he's wearing the mask of a farmer. He's wearing the Joel Flora mask today or whatever. And behind that mascara, yeah, that's scary. Behind that mask, he's working to feed his people, to bless his people. And I feel like that's kind of the role of farmers in society, is that they're keeping us alive.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people just, to your point about not understanding where their food comes from, I think that's...
Yeah.
Part of the problem is that they don't see that the farmers actually play a role in that.
Yeah, and it's amazing how many other industries are supported by farming.
Okay.
You know, trucking, shipping, you know, packing. I mean, it employs millions and millions of jobs that really aren't on the farm, right? Mm-hmm. The farm is just kind of the starting point. It's definitely interesting.
You've already mentioned about the walk of faith that it is, but I'm just curious to know, like, as a Christian farmer, you know, how do you farm differently than perhaps a non-Christian farmer? Is there anything that stands out? I mean, I know that you obviously have to trust God.
Yeah.
But how does your Christian life?
Well, it's interesting. I know that this is a false statement.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. But every farmer I know is a Christian.
That's interesting. Again, so city folk ruining everything. That's super interesting.
It's not that there aren't. But like in our community, I mean, we have Mennonite, you've got Amish, you've got, you know, all different denominations. But they're all, you know, everyone I know is a believer. Attending a church somewhere.
Right.
So
different stripes, of course.
But you see that kind of permeate through a variety of ways. But I mean, one of the things I can think of is when tragedy hits, the community shows up, your neighbors show up, your other, you know, your combine burns, you have a heart attack right before harvest. There'll be 10 combines in the field. 10 neighbors will show up.
And wow.
Just get it done, you know. So you
everybody knows what they're doing,
Yeah.
Everyone's skilled. It's not like I showed up to help you. It ruined it. You're getting 10 skilled laborers.
But that
to do what
that
needs
even
to be done.
Happened. I mean, it's not even just in farming, but like a couple weeks ago, I was feeling stressed out about this house I'm building, mm-hmm. and I happened to mention it to one of my neighbors. I had seen him, and a couple days later, you know, he showed up with two other Amish guys and helped me knock a bunch of stuff out.
That's so cool.
So just that level of community.
Yeah, loving your neighbor.
Loving your neighbor. There are other things. I mean, there's a level of trust. It's not that you can't still get ripped off, but there's a level of trust generally among neighbors that I think comes from our Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
Of, you know, if you say you're going to do something or you help somebody out and you charge them something for it, it's going to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't really have to worry too much about some of that kind of practice going on. So
I'm probably waxing eloquent here, but I think that not only are farmers sustaining us as far as food goes, but it sounds like they're even sustaining a moral backbone of the country in a lot of ways.
To some degree. Yeah.
Although they would be in, you know, different faith traditions, they still have a sense of right and wrong, taking care of your neighbor,
yeah,
that perhaps other parts of society don't have that as much.
Yeah, I would say that would be. I mean, that's a lot of weight to put on.
Yeah, you better get it right, Joel. You better never make a mistake. No, I just think that you know, you look at. I'm generalizing, but in certain segments of society, you know, they're not helping the moral fabric of our society. They're not, you know, they're a drain on it. You know, like the arson, for example.
Right.
It's obviously a bad example because he's criminal, but like he's draining the moral energy that we should have as a society. But farmers are pouring into it by living a life of faith. Trusting God for their crops, taking care of neighbors, probably ethical business standards too, for the most part. I mean, I'm sure there are crooks. There are crooks everywhere.
Yeah, and one of the things I've seen, and this, you know, might be specific to my father-in-law, but one of the things I've always thought was really neat about him was the level of openness and like welcoming
mm-hmm.
anybody in.
Mm.
Helping people, and he has several. There's several or a handful of people that swing by the farm from time to time that are maybe kind of a forgotten in society a little bit.
Mm.
And he always has time.
Wow.
To just chat with them for, you know, some funny stories from all that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, like, even part of the parable of the Good Samaritan, right? One of them passed by probably in a hurry, right? We think about that. Like, how many times have I not helped someone on the side of the road because I've been in a hurry, right?
Yeah.
But a farmer would have a time in his day to be able to stop what he's doing. And
And something I love doing, there's always kids that come out and, you know, just sit in the yard and watch when you're going by.
Hmm.
Like while you're working, it's always fun to stop and, you know, let people climb up in. And I don't know, I just feel like you're busy, you got lots of work to do, but you also are afforded a lot of time to just be with people.
Right.
So.
And time is so valuable.
Time is valuable. You hear the time is money all the time, right?
Right.
Time is money. You got to go, go, go. And that's been one of the most interesting things for me that I've felt is time is no longer money.
Mm.
Money.
That's Ecclesiastes right there.
Exists. You must have it to survive. Right. But I don't think in terms of like, oh, I make so much an hour, or I'm going to work 10 hours on this project and get X in return. It just doesn't exist. You work, you do what needs to be done, and hopefully you have enough money at the end of the year to meet all your needs.
Yeah.
But the whole time and money doesn't really...
It's really disconnected quite a bit. It's interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are ways that farmers strategize and think about how can I invest in such and such
sure.
a combine to make my returns better or whatever. Yep. And that's just being wise sure. stewards. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, time is somewhat disconnected. Probably because it's such a waiting game. I mean, you plant in March or April.
The amount of money that gets invested every year at the beginning of the year is astronomical.
And one and flood.
You don't see it. If you do see it, you won't see it until the end of the year. A whole year passes, basically.
It's incredible.
Which is crazy.
It's incredible. So. What a lifestyle. It really is a walk of faith. I'm just blown away by that. And I've known you for years, and so, you know, I think about these things, and we've talked about them before, but I'm still, even now as we're talking, just blown away by the walk of faith that farmers have, and that, in a way, society, non-Christian society, whatever, society, or whatever you want to call it, is relying on the faith that farmers have that God's going to provide a bountiful harvest.
Yeah.
Like, whether or not I eat, or my car goes, or whatever, because I put gas in it, is banking on you guys living by faith. Like, that's that is just blowing me away right now. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I love the picture of, you know, the weathered old man. And it's like, you know, he's a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you see these pop up on social media in a variety of different ways. But,
yeah.
And it's like, you know, I feel fine. I'm doing great.
Oh, yeah. It's fine.
I'm 40 years old or 30 years old or whatever. He's like,
he's,
you know.
Like, looks like a used catcher's mitt. His face is so wrinkly.
All the stress and the everything that goes into it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not just.
It ages you.
Right.
To some degree.
And I don't want to paint a rosy picture because I don't think you are painting a rosy picture. There are a lot of problems. There's a combine catching on fire, which you also had happen, right? That was
That was the year before that we lost the barn.
And what happened? That wasn't arson.
That was just a fluke.
A fluke.
I think there was
my combine went up in flames.
I think in our area that year, for some whatever reason, there were like 3 or 4 combines that burnt. It was really hot, dry year.
Tell people what a combine is for those that don't know. I mean, I know clearly.
It's a machine that removes the crop from the field.
Okay, and what's it do with the husks and the stalk or whatever?
Ours leaves everything, all that stuff, in the field.
Okay.
There are different types. So, like, right now, silage season is in full swing, and it's what dairy farms feed to their cows. And so they actually go in and cut and chop the entire stalk, ear and all, and take all those nutrients.
Oh, really? And the actual corn itself?
Yep.
And the stalk, okay.
Yeah, and they feed that silage to their cattle during the year. If you're ever driving through the country and you see like a giant pile with like a big white tarp over it,
I've seen tires.
That.
Yeah.
That's just a big pile of silage. It's just chopped up corn.
So silage is chopped up crop of some kind.
Yeah.
So it has all the fiber.
Yeah.
In it.
Silage.
It's a new word for me. So I feel like I've heard of it, but I don't.
Yeah. Silage. I've always just known it as corn. And then they had, like, if it's hay, they call it haylage. So I don't know what silage means.
Oh, I love
it's corn.
Butter and salt on my fresh sile. Interesting. Okay, so that's what those big white tarps are. There's stuff under that. There's feed for other animals. So not only are you feeding humans, you're feeding all the other animals as
Our
well.
Our corn, so the corn we grow is we just take the corn. We leave the rest of the nutrients. Plant nutrients in the field to decay and return to the earth.
So I've talked a lot about what you like about farming. What do you hate about it? What would be like, man, if I could wave a magic wand, or let me baptize this a little bit. If God would answer this prayer, what would it be? Like, what do you not like about farming that?
Well, I'm still fairly new to the farming game, and I mean, I've been around it all
right,
my life, but
this
I'm
is
still
your first full-time foray into it.
Yeah, so. My father-in-law would probably have a better answer to that. But to this point, I can't think of anything.
You like it that much?
I like it that much.
Wow. That's impressive.
I don't think I would change it for, you know. I think my biggest fear at this point is that God would call me to something else.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, that's funny.
And I'm just kind of assuming that that's, you know, something like
that's
going
to
happen.
Yeah, why not assume the word?
But no, I really do love it that much. I mean, there's always things that you wish you had, you know, newer, nicer equipment and that kind of stuff.
Well, that's life.
But that's
coveting.
Stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's
so.
Right.
But in terms of like actual what I'm doing, I don't think I would change anything.
Wow. I'm happy for you. I mean, I know we had a pact that you wouldn't move away, but I'm happy that God has placed you where you wanted to be and fulfilled a lifelong dream. I mean, very few people can say that.
Very few people can, and it's been an absolute treasure to me to watch or to experience it for myself, but also just watch the effects that it's had on my family. It's affected all of us for the
how so?
For good. I don't know. I think one of the biggest things with my children is just I have more time,
yeah,
with them, and so you know I you can't really take you know a 10-year-old to a construction site every day,
mm-hmm.
you know, into people's homes, and you can to some degree, but they have school and you know
mm-hmm.
different things that keep you from doing that. So between the farming lifestyle and homeschooling. It just affords us a lot of time to be together.
Yeah.
And I think some of it might be a little bit of a false sense of security because we're living with my in-laws.
That's true. You're building your house. And so,
there's not a whole lot. Like, I help out, do whatever around the house, but it's not like that normal. I'm coming home and I'm the only one
to fix they've everything. They've had adult attention for a while. Yeah.
But I think it's the slowing down, being able to invest more in each other.
Mm.
It's been really sweet.
That's awesome. Wow. So,
and we miss people. I miss seeing your rosy face.
Oh yeah. Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't miss this?
and the kids, yeah. I mean, you know, they miss their friends and,
probably club sports or whatever.
Yeah, we didn't really do a lot of that kind of stuff, but they miss church friends and neighbors, you know, on our street. They had really close friends, so. But they're resilient.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing how fast kids can make new friends.
Hmm.
Me, not so much.
Yeah. Do you remember how we became friends, Joel? I don't know if I should tell people this story.
Yeah, in spite of myself, probably.
I was new to a Christ Community Church, and I love church work days. That's one of my favorite things throughout the year is just people coming together and helping the church. I don't know if it's maybe I'm Amish at heart and having like an Amish barn raising together, but I remember the guy in charge put me in the storage room to clean out the storage room, and you know, I know we're seated, so people might not realize that you're like a foot taller than me and stronger and all that. But they wanted to move these enormous speakers to the top shelf of the storage room. You know, I'm guessing 20 feet high? I don't know. 15?
Yeah, probably 15.
So there's nothing but a ladder and you and me, and I look down at these enormous speakers that probably like came up to my chest. And I'm like, Joel, how are we gonna get these up there? And you looked at me and you said, "Do you remember?
Like a man,
like a man." And you picked up the speaker in your hand, hauled it onto your back, climbed up the ladder, and threw it onto the shelf. Came back down, did the second one too. And I'm like, I guess this means we're friends. Yeah, that was the first time.
Interestingly enough, as soon as that happened, I was just like
a man.
Oh, that was awful.
Yeah, this guy's probably not going. He's not going to stick around.
This guy's going to go home. He's going. Like, yeah. This place isn't for us.
I went home and I said, "Honey, I'm not a man."
Actually, no. Those speakers are probably
they're
still
probably
up
still
there.
In the storage room.
We should
room.
Try it again.
Yeah, we should. I'm sure I could get it up there if I had to. But yeah, I mean that was the first time we became friends, or when we became friends, and you know your move was sad for me because I miss you obviously, but I'm overjoyed that God is blessing you with a lifestyle that is slower, more peaceful, more with your family. I know that he's given you a good church to be a part of, and so that just you know that makes
I still haven't let you off the hook though.
I still have to pray for you.
Still have to pray
okay,
for
I'll still pray for you. But that means the world that God has blessed you in this way, even though it's been, you know, we miss you. Miss you guys a lot.
Well, we miss you guys too. I mean, it's funny because when we moved away, it was obviously really hard, but there was so much fun, exciting things that you're looking forward to.
Yeah.
But honestly, the people that's what you miss.
Right.
The things, the places, the city, you know, that, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need that.
You don't need that.
I'd like to be able to not barely see my neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah. So is that over there? That's Farmer Joe or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, with our friendship. I remember that instance, but I don't really remember us becoming friends.
Yeah.
We just were.
Right.
And that's been a huge gift to me.
Yeah. That's cool.
I don't even know how many years it's been.
Yeah.
It's been
seven.
Feels like
over seven,
feels
I guess.
Like
probably seven.
Most of my life.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, yeah.
No, that's
and
awesome.
Thankfully, that's continued.
Right. Time and space hasn't mattered, right?
It hasn't.
Yeah.
Hasn't hurt us.
Well, I love what farmers do, and I'm glad you're doing it. And one thing that came to mind, it was one reason that I go hunting each year. This seems like a rabbit trail, but it comes back together, is because I want my kids to know where meat comes from, right? And it's not just fun to go deer hunting or whatever, but I actually want to show them that it's hard.
Yeah.
It is a hard process. Something else has to give its life in order for us to have food. I mean, it's just riddled with biblical allusions, right? Like Jesus died so that we could have life and things like that. So I go hunting each year, one day a year, while the kids are young, and try and teach them that this is what, you know, how we get food. Now, the rest of the year we go to the grocery store and buy food. And it's, you know, shrink wrapped in this little container or whatever.
The food that actually kills you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. but so I'm trying to, in object lessons, show like, okay, most of the time we get our food from here, but this food came from somewhere else also. It came from a farmer that was raising food and had to kill this animal. And, and so that's one reason I try to, or one reason I go hunting and have some success in hunting is to show my family what it takes to actually have food to live on. And I think that's one of my big takeaways from all that you've said today and just having known you for so long. Like farming is feeding people by God's grace.
Yeah.
Right? We would not be here if it were not for farmers.
Yeah.
All the tech stuff, all of the science, which is wonderful, and the engineering, and all of the fun stuff, the music and the entertainment, it's all riding on the backs of farmers.
Yeah.
A lot of pressure on you, Joel Flora.
I know.
A lot of pressure.
I know. It's tough.
Don't ruin it. Well,
stay. Yeah, this is a time of year, too, where you see those big machines out there.
Yeah. Stop and thank a farmer.
Slow down.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And let us get where we're going safe.
That's right. Yeah, don't run them.
Oh, it's amazing how many people just...
Do they, like, honk when they go by? And
yeah, sometimes. And just they're going just crazy fast, and we can't see them. And they're just, you know... It can be scary.
Wow. Well, thanks for being here today. Thanks for what you're doing.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm super excited about not just you being in the place that you've always wanted, but God using you in the lives of other people in ways that they don't even know. I mean, people thousands of miles away are utilizing your corn and soybean probably, which is pretty interesting. I mean, that's by God's grace, that's what's happening, and that's amazing.
Yeah.
So
praise God.
Yeah, keep up the good work.
Thanks.
Thanks, man.
See you.
Maine and Gray is brought to you by Christ Community Church of Carmel, Indiana, at the corner of Main Street and Gray Road. If you're looking for a church home or just visiting the Indianapolis area, stop in and say hi. We'd love to get to know you. Until then, God bless.